Welcome to Business Success Radio. My name is Anthony Turner and I'm going to be your host as we chat to everyday small business people about their journeys, their challenges, and hopefully gain some tips about how we can all make our businesses better. Today my guest is a lady called Anne Hurley. I had the pleasure of interviewing her back in 2014 as part of the Business Success Radio, and we were having some interesting chats about her background as a lawyer, a senior executive in many telecommunication type organisations, including the NBN, and her transition from family tragedy into her own business. We pick up the conversation where I was asking her about the changes to the digital economy and how it might impact us in the future.
What would you see as probably the main points of what this digital economy is going to look like, so maybe informative for our listeners?
It's, well, fundamentally going to be IT technology driven, less bricks and mortar, less physical infrastructure. It's really about understanding the opportunities of doing commerce online is ultimately what it comes down to. Government services delivered online, it enables enormous possibilities for people working in remote areas or people living in remote areas to get access to services that they wouldn't be able to get, to set up businesses that that they wouldn't be able to run otherwise, and do it because the systems are increasingly getting there to run a business completely digitally. More and more applications are being developed to enable it to happen. I mean, it's by way of aside, I'm currently selling my house and looking for somewhere else to live, and because I've been running this business from home, one of the things that I have to look at is where I'm going. Does it have adequate broadband to be able to run a business from home?
Yes.
So it starts to sort of dictate a lot about the kind of choices that you make about how you're running your business or living your life.
Yeah, and I guess Business Success Radio is one of those, you know, similar types of things of, you know, being part of the digital economy, in the sense that, you know, we are recording, we're using tools and applications that are available, some of them freely available, to enable us to actually make this recording, and then we can actually podcast and do whatever we want with this, you know, globally. So it provides a unique opportunity for small business owners like yourself and myself to actually have a global presence where some time ago it would be beyond the scope of what we could achieve.
Oh, that's exactly it, Anthony. That, you know, you've got to be able then to think beyond the boundaries of Australia. It's really that there is so much more opportunity for access to the listeners that you have who are going to be listening to the programs that you have, and you've got the different digital means of putting it out there. So there's so many different ways, so many other channels to be able to access it. Oh, yes, it's absolutely fascinating.
And that's probably an interesting segue into, you know, your changes in the sense that, you know, you've gone from this, let's say, corporate type career into the solopreneur and in a digital business.
As you alluded to in your introduction, I went through a really tough personal time in 2011. At the time, I'd left Comms Alliance and I was doing interim CEO roles. So I ran the Internet Industry Association for a while and a couple of other organisations. I was actively pursuing the board roles, you know, one of the ones where there's still the massive glass ceiling for women, but actively pursuing that. And then in 2011, my world tumbled because in that 1 year, my husband died suddenly in May of 2011, and then 5 months later, my 24-year-old son died very suddenly. He took his own life, and it was massive, as you could well understand, the impact upon everybody.
Yeah. Certainly is a huge catalyst for personal change, isn't
it? Totally. And it was at that point I decided I couldn't continue doing services. doing professional services. I didn't have it in me to stand up. I couldn't have sat around a table and collaborated, you know, with the industry to get some kind of outcome on an industry standard or a code. I just didn't feel capable or have the strength within me. But I needed to work, and for me, working was a way of dealing with the grief as well. And I had read at one point in time The 4-Hour Work Week. And one of the
great little book.
With a type A personality without question, but and some very good lessons in it. And one of the phrases that stood out in my mind was when he said, "I needed to find a product to push." And I thought, you know, I think that's it. I need to find a product as opposed to services. And seeing as how I had been so passionate about the digital economy, and I thought, well, I've been talking about it for so long, maybe I can do it with a product. And that began then the search. And I also wanted to be able to do something that would ultimately generate sufficient revenues to be able to give back to mental health, to support people like my beautiful James, who had been afflicted with depression and couldn't find a way out of it. So to be able to give money back and support those kind of initiatives as well going forward. So that was a whole lot of thinking that was racing around at the time. Yeah,
without dwelling on depression, I mean, I have a personal understanding of that, having been through it myself some years ago, and it's an entirely, totally debilitating condition, and certainly one that I would encourage any listeners who feel that they may be feeling a little depressed or whatever to seek some external support and help, because it's one of the things that I don't believe any of us can do on our own. We really do need external help when dealing with that particular condition.
You're absolutely right, and it is important to be able to articulate it, because that was James's journey, was that he couldn't articulate it. He couldn't deal with it. And so that made it harder for everybody else to work with him.
Yes.
And it's so much, particularly for young men, particularly when it hits in early adolescence, it is a real issue of feeling comfortable enough to tell a story that I don't feel good and this is why not, and then be able to get the help. Yeah,
absolutely. So out of this, and we're talking about the the digital business that you decided to go into, and product. So what sort of product did you go for?
Well, that took a while. I thought, what am I going to do? It wasn't intuitive. People had said to me, I got lots of advice. A lot of people saying, well, if you're going to do this, you need to find something that you're really passionate about. And I thought, well, I'm really only passionate about family and friends. You know, I couldn't really target anything else. And then by way of circuitous thinking again, I thought, well, I do like a jacket. I do like a nice leather jacket. I do like to buy a nice leather jacket every year. So maybe that's. I started researching leather jackets, and I thought maybe customising the opportunities that you could do online. A bit like I had met the people from Shoes of Prey and number of times, and was quite impressed with their model of customising the design of shoes online. So I thought, well, maybe you can do that with jackets. And there was a few organisations in America that were doing it. I thought, maybe there's something in this. And I remember running past my sister at one point. If I was to do a business that was about selling jackets online that you could go on and customise yourself with, you know, your own pockets, your own collar, your own zips and buttons, would you be interested? And her response was, well, no, I'd really prefer to buy it off the rack. But, you know, I am increasingly getting into cruelty-free alternatives. I couldn't buy leather anymore because I think that it's exploitation of animals. And it was around the time of the live exports furore of, you know, 3 or so years ago. And that really got me thinking as well. So I started to research it as well, and always having the bent for cruelty-free myself. I thought, well, this is perhaps another humanitarian bent to the business, that we start to look at leather alternatives and we promote cruelty-free lifestyles as well. And so that led me into the faux leather, non-leather jackets and accessories.
What an interesting journey.
There's not a lot of rhyme or reason to that part, but, you know.
So you established James & Co.
James & Co. James was my son, of course, yeah.
Yes, and that is now jamesandco.com or .com.au?
.com.au,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the website for any of the lady listeners who are looking for some faux leather fashion that can be custom designed to your specific needs.
No, sorry, Anthony. I went away from the customization. And I've thought about it since, but in a digital world, to do customization would be extremely difficult. You'd have to have such incredible quality control over at the production end, and I think you'd have a lot of returns if you didn't quite get it right. So I haven't actually gone down that road. No, they're all one-offs, basically. Yeah.
Okay, so they're your designs?
Yes, my daughter and I actually designed them with a bit of help from our manufacturer, yeah.
Fabulous, and available through jamesco.com.au.
And also now, in the US and the UK, but you might want to go there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, I believe you had three primary goals for James & Co.
Yes,
So one of those, according to the information I've received, is to design and manufacture a product that's ethically produced, yes, and could be sold through purely through online. Yes. The second one was to source ethically based manufacturers, yes, in India and Pakistan, yep, and to support charities and foundations that provide services to people suffering from depression.
Yep, absolutely. So I'd say we're ticking the boxes, early stages of all of it. We are doing the ethical jackets. The faux leather is top quality. It's on one view, it looks so real, you wonder whether you're achieving your objective, because anyone looking at it might say, well, that's a really nice-looking leather jacket. But we are definitely manufacturing the ethical products. I've spent a lot of time sourcing the manufacturers for the products. We have the two ranges. One's the jackets, which are manufactured in Pakistan, and the other are the accessories, which are manufactured in India. They're not the original manufacturers that I started with, but as I was doing meeting, I originally met online with the manufacturers. I actually then went to India and met them face to face and saw where they were actually working in the factories and things. And I got testimonials and support that they actually implemented ethical practices, that there was no child labour, and I could see it for myself when I was there as well. So critically important that the suppliers that you're getting from are ethical as well. I couldn't do a sourcing arrangement with Bangladesh, for example, with the issues that they have there.
Yeah, no, that would make sense. Yeah. So were there any particular starting points? So I'm just thinking for listeners who might be thinking about manufacturing offshore, yeah, is that are there any particular starting points that you went to find people,
yeah,
or potential people?
Definitely. I just went online. I went to Alibaba, which is one of the largest, yep, online sites, and to IndiaMart. And then one of the first things I wanted to do when I started, having done a lot of work in India when I was with American Express, I wanted to find somebody local who could be a kind of agent for me over there and who could deal with the quality control issues. So having found that person through online as well and negotiated with a few, we went over to India and met her, and were impressed that she could do what she could do, and she introduced us to the original manufacturers. We took it from there, and she put in place the quality control that was really necessary. It's interesting that since that journey, I now no longer use an agent. Of the manufacturers that I've got, quality for them, again, is so important. Dealing online and digitally, it's kind of like a self-reinforcing mechanism, because there is so much opportunity for feedback and for rating, and if you don't do it right and it gets that there in the digital world, your business isn't worth it. In lots of ways, it kind of almost makes the Competition Consumer Act almost redundant in lots of ways. You can't be misleading or deceptive when you're working and selling in the online world.
Well, that's a very interesting point that I hadn't considered, because, I mean, I when I'm going out and about in places that I don't know, I might look at a restaurant and look up Urban Spoon or something like that to get some feedback. But, of course, if people are looking for manufacturers and they're duds, then the word through all of the various social media channels and everything else, their reputation could be tarnished very, very quickly.
Don't go there, and very much on the sort of the Alibabas and the India Marts as well. Don't go there.
Yeah. Amazing. So, Anne, are there any other sort of tips and traps? I mean, one of the things that I do like in terms of your three primary goals, and one of those is supporting charities and foundations, and that is having a philanthropic element to what you do. Without going into the details of which charities, I guess I understand the reasoning why you went in that direction, but what are some of the benefits do you think there are for even small businesses to be having a philanthropic element?
I was always impressed by Richard Branson's approach to people and planet before profit. And I think if you bring that balance to it, that you're not just about profit at any price, it just has an appeal to people who want to deal with companies that are going to see things much more holistically than just about profit, pure profit. So I think that there's just, from both sides, just pure benefit. From the supplier side, we're putting in place what we can to live the humanitarian principles that we're putting out there. And for the buyers who look at us and say, yeah, I can understand it's not an organisation, or it's an organisation that wants to help save the planet, it wants to help save animals, it wants to support these other organisations for people with mental health, and that resonates with me, then I think you can grow your customer base as well, but also you develop the kind of customer base that's really important to your business. I have to say, I've got a lovely customer base. they expect me to deliver what I say I'm going to deliver, but the interactions are, you know, people of like-minded souls almost. Yeah, it's a really pleasant way to do business. You do get your occasional not so nice, but not very often.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I've worked in a number of different areas, and the people, as you say, have got a more holistic approach to their businesses, and that is that they put the customer needs, and by customer I don't necessarily mean the person buying the product. It could be the supplier, it could be, you know, the contractors, all of the people around you. But putting those people's needs first in the sense of ensuring that they are doing well, then you seem to automatically do well as a result.
I totally agree. We've just found another way that we can actually be part of this more holistic and humanitarian base as well. You get items, of course, that sometimes you don't sell all of them, and so you've got things that are left over that just aren't going to move. And there's an organisation that originally started in the US but has come here now called Good 360. And what they do is they work with organisations that have leftover stock that they can't sell, and they are going to donate it to charities. So that I've been able to donate things that didn't sell for James & Co's to Good 360, and they will donate it to other charities that are looking for clothes or accessories or whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's almost all the whole idea being all along we want to be digital the whole step of the supply chain, and we also want to be humanitarian every step of the supply chain if we can.
Yeah. Oh, I love the mix. Mm. And one of the things that I'm sure you faced is in making a transition from the corporate environment into a solopreneur environment. I've had the pleasure and privilege of working with a lot of business mentors who have made a similar sort of transition. You know, when they say go into retirement or semi-retirement, they tend to do some volunteer work assisting small businesses. Mm. One of the things that I've noticed from some of them is that they have a bit of a difficulty at times from coming from the corporate arena, where they've always got a number of people who they can delegate to taking on the responsibility of actually doing everything yourself. How did you find that particular transition for you?
It hasn't been an issue for me at all yet. It probably will become it, because what I needed to do was to learn everything. And so I wanted to get to the point where I understood what running a digital business was all about, what digital marketing is all about, the kind of apps that are out there. At one stage I said to myself, I've got more dashboards than anybody should have in a lifetime. You know, how is my digital marketing working? How are my keywords impacting? All those sorts of things. So for me, I needed to learn every aspect of it before I could outsource it. So that for me was really important.
But I think you also say some of the more tedious aspects of doing a business. So, you know, typically one talks about, you know, if you're working on the marketing and running a business, then maybe you should be outsourcing some of the administrative things, like it may be the bookkeeping or it could be having a virtual assistant or whatever it is. Do you actually engage people like that to assist you in the journey?
I have got some external advisors for marketing. The Americans are very innovative in this particular way, and they set up they have apps for, you know, developing great graphics and for accessing particular markets, and they always combine it with webinars and with weekly calls to make sure that you're across the whole range of what they're actually doing. I'm about to start outsourcing the bookkeeping. I do have an accountant, but you can get online bookkeeping as well for some of the more tedious sort of stuff that leads to having to do BAS returns and stuff like that. So I am by no means shy of outsourcing what I don't need to do. So, yeah, absolutely, we'll be looking at that. And I think with all the opportunities that are there online, it is so much more possible now. When I was looking at the kind of opportunities for outsourcing bookkeeping, not taking care of the accountant's function, but just for basic bookkeeping, it's very competitive. Very competitive.
Yeah, it's getting more and more so, isn't it? You know, with virtual assistants and, you know, as you say, bookkeepers online.
Yeah.
And particularly now that, you know, some of the more traditional programs, I mean, like, well, you've got Xero, which is purely online, and now some of the other ones, the MYOBs, QuickBooks and everything else, are all coming up with their own online portals so they can compete in that space.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing a BAS without MyOB.
So, Anne, I know your change was a catalyst from personal events, but yeah, for some of the business owners or potential people in corporate, let's say, who are considering being business owners, what are some of the tips or traps do you think you might be able to advise them on when thinking about making a career change, which is quite significant like that?
Yeah. I think the first thing is just to basically trust yourself that you can do something different. That's would be the first challenge. And the next bit of advice, what was really critical for me was actually writing the business plan, that I had to articulate what was running through my head into a business plan and set myself the goals and what exactly was I going to have to do to set the business up, from the branding, the name, the financing, the manufacturers, all of it. I needed to have it in a plan, and was it doable? And then I ran it past a few people to say, can you sanitize this for me? What am I not missing? Is it doable? Things like when I first started looking at it, I was going to do just jackets, and then I realised if I was only going to do it in Australia, that I wouldn't be selling jackets in summer. So,
Good point.
So practically you bring in kind of accessories. I'm doing some advisory and mentoring work for an organisation called Tech Beach at Manly, and they're predominantly young entrepreneurs who have great ideas of how to innovate with the applications that they want to develop. And it's fascinating actually seeing it at that level. And it's probably the same for somebody who's making, you know, later life choices to become a solopreneur. It's important from what I've seen there not to be blinkered by the idea itself, that you think that, say, this might be a fantastic app or a brilliant innovation, and you don't take into account the other broader context of the business which needs to happen. That would be my fundamental tip. You don't be blinkered by one aspect of it. You have to look at it as a whole of business perspective, not whiz bang technology.
Yeah, I think also too, one of the things that I've learned is that it's very, very important, and you know, you were saying you did your business plans, to actually really test the financial viability of the idea, to understand what, you know, what you really need to have happen for your business to work successfully.
And have the exit strategy. Yes.
Yeah, it's a very good point, because I think many, my wife and I have got a gift shop, and we actually started that up with the whole idea that within a certain period of time that it would be ready and would be sold. So our exit strategy was actually in place from day one, which was the sale of the business. And yet in all the work that I've done in mentoring, I've found that the majority of business owners or potential business owners or incumbent business owners fail to think about how they're going to get out of their businesses and often get trapped in that business.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, and it's all like, I suppose, anything you embark upon in a professional or career life, you've got to plan it. You've got to be strategic about it and plan it and set up your goals and objectives and hold yourself to it. Not to say you can't change direction if something's not working, but again, I'm a firm believer in the plan.
Yeah, and I also like the comment that you made about getting some outside input as well,
yeah,
and through that planning stage. So I guess whether that's through business coaches or mentors,
yeah,
or, you know, industry experts, it doesn't really matter, but it's actually getting that third-party view to test the viability of your concept.
Absolutely, because we come to it, you know, with our own background and experiences, which are bounded by some kind of boundaries. Somebody else with a different perspective can say something that, you know, just opens your eyes and says, yes, well, that's exactly the way I should do it. Or drop that part of it, that probably wouldn't work, yes.
So, Anne, now that your business is actually getting established, what are some of your future challenges that you potentially have?
Oh, it's basically growth, I think. Growth and still working out how we are going to become increasingly a leader in the digital economy. We're selling in the US and in the UK via Amazon at the moment and eBay. So we're looking at an expansion strategy of looking at existing digital marketplaces that we can go into. So we're exporting directly to the US and directly to the UK now. So focusing on that, then the challenge becomes, how do we market effectively in the US and the UK as well? So how do we make it all kind of global? And I'm sort of finding it's a bit challenging now, because not all the same products are necessarily the same in all three markets. So different landing pages, it starts to have its own challenges, and how can we really effectively make it work?
Yeah, I guess also too, with the UK and America, and particularly North America and the northern parts of North America, you've got very different climatic conditions and therefore different products that you're going to need to satisfy those markets. Mm.
But the good thing about it is that you balance out the inequalities here. So it's starting to be top selling season in the US now. I know from this time last year that they start buying jackets and no one in Australia is thinking about jackets when it's 35 degrees.
Yeah. True.
So it's good. So you can then, for now, I'm actually in the situation for 2015, going into year three, that I can start to plan now. We've planned the production schedule for next year, so we can match the climatic conditions as well. So it's all a learning curve.
isn't that life?
Yeah,
life
totally.
Is always a learning curve.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. I just love it.
Great. And just in wrapping up, just one final question. If there was one single piece of advice that you might give to a budding entrepreneur who's looking to break out of the workplace, whether that's at a lower or a senior level, and into their own sort of business, what would that be?
Look, it's probably something which is born of, you know, a lifetime of experience, but as twee as it sounds, everything happens for a reason. And if you're forced to leave a workplace or you have to take a redundancy, it happens for a reason. If you can turn that to an opportunity, so seeing everything in terms of it's happened, how do I make it work? It happens for a reason. I set up James & Co. because I probably would never have done it in all the other circumstances. Things happened in my life for a reason. This was one of the responses to it. It's being open-minded and seeing everything in terms of what's the positive outcomes of all of this? It's happened. How do I make it all work?
What a great way to end an interview. Anne Hurley, thank you for spending some time with us on Business Success Radio.
Oh, thanks so much, Anthony.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Business Success Radio podcast. If you'd like to hear more episodes, simply check Biz Success Radio on your current podcast player or visit us on our website, businesssuccessradio.com.au.